Sunny, hot and humid with a high in the mid-90s. Heat index readings around 110 degrees. The wind from the southwest at 5 to 10 miles per hour. Tomorrow night, mostly clear with a low of 77. Evening heat index readings tomorrow around 110. The wind from the southwest at 5 to 10 miles per hour. Thursday, sunny with a high in the mid-90s. Southwest wind 5 to 10 miles per hour. The afternoon heat index around 110. The wind out of the southwest from 5 to 10 miles per hour. Thursday night through Saturday night, partly cloudy. Lows in the mid-70s, highs in the mid-90s. Heat index readings around 110. At noon Central Time, most locations in Illinois and Indiana reported sunshine with temperatures in the 90s. At Rockford, it was 95. At O'Hare, 90. 92 degrees at Bloomington, Mattoon, and Carbondale. At South Bend, 89. 93 at Lafayette, 91 at Indianapolis, and Terre Haute, 92. Willard Airport reported 92 degrees at the top of the hour. The dew point, 82, giving us a heat index of 114. The relative humidity, 72%. The wind out of the west at 7. The barometric pressure, 29.95 and falling. And on the campus of the University of Illinois at 12:39, 93 degrees. The California Public Employees Retirement System, known as CalPERS, has reported its best earnings in 14 years. CalPERS is the nation's largest public pension system and provides benefits to about 1.6 million state and local employees, retirees, and their families. NPR's Nina Gregory reports.
CalPERS is the nation's largest public pension system. It provides benefits to over 1.6 million state and local employees, retirees, and their families. To make sure it can make good on all its promises, the fund has a target investment return of 7.75% a year. But for fiscal year 2010, it nearly tripled that and made just under 21%. CalPERS made that by sticking with the right stocks.
Stocks returned over 30% in the past year.
That's Joe Deere. He's the fund's chief investment officer. After a few brutal years for the fund, it lost 24% in 2009, Deere explains that CalPERS invests for the long term.
The long horizon allows the investor to know that even when we have a bad year, that is, equities go down a lot, we have the staying power, the liquidity, the cash to ride through those downturns and keep our exposure so that when they return to their long-term historical performance, we're there to get that too.
Though it's the second year in a row the fund has exceeded its earnings target, Deere says CalPERS should not assume this level of earnings will be sustained. Nina Gregory, NPR News.
Borders is closing after failing to find a buyer that wants to run the bookstore chain. The bankrupt firm will be liquidated. Some stores will close as soon as Friday. Michigan Public Radio's Jennifer Guerra has more.
When it comes to why the second largest retail bookseller in the nation went under, everyone has an opinion.
I think e-books hurt Borders. On my iPad, I can get a book from Amazon.
It was inevitable. I think that if you watch Borders over the past several years, you saw a lot of management change, and they seem to happen regularly. So there was a lot of churn at the top.
There's just so many other ways people read today. I mean, I do have a Kindle, and I do have a iPad.
That was Sherry Hober, Larry Molnar, and Pat Johnson. We caught up with them outside the flagship Borders store in Ann Arbor, just minutes after the company announced it was closing. Another person I talked to said the whole bankruptcy boils down to real estate, that Borders went on a big buying spree in the 90s and ended up with a lot of overpriced space that they couldn't unload. But Jane Friedman, a professor of electronic media at the University of Cincinnati, says Borders' demise has less to do with real estate and bad management and more to do with the reality of the 21st century.
It's a big sign of the larger transition we're all making to digital books and digital reading devices. So we're probably going to see a further decline of the bricks and mortar stores and further movement away from people reading print or paper books and more people adopting digital reading devices.
Perhaps the most telling piece of news came in April. That's when Amazon announced, for the first time since the Kindle was introduced, that it was selling more e-books than print books in the U.S. But Friedman says that doesn't necessarily spell doom and gloom to the book industry and to book culture in general.
Some of the angst that's surrounding this will eventually settle down, and people will realize that it's not that books are going away or that reading's going away, but we're changing the way that we get the books.
Little solace for the nearly 11,000 Borders employees who are soon going to be out of a job. In a statement released yesterday, Borders says the liquidation process will start almost immediately for some of its stores. The book company currently owns about 400 stores, down from more than 1,200 in 2003.
When I was a kid, Borders was where you went to find out about books that you didn't know about. It was like walking into the internet before the internet existed.
That's Ann Arbor native Steve Amick. Both his novels, The Lake, The River, and The Other Lake, and Nothing But a Smile, were sold at Borders stores nationwide. Amick wishes he could say the demise of Borders means more independent bookstores will pop up, but he doesn't think that's the case. His prediction?
I think bookstores more and more will resemble bookstores at the airport, you know?
Where most of what's offered are cookbooks, vampire novels, and celebrity tell-alls. For NPR News, I'm Jennifer Guerra.
More than 30 years after her last big swim, Diana Nyad is back in the water. Nyad, a former commentator for NPR's Morning Edition, became well known in the 1970s for her swim around Manhattan and a few years later for swimming from the Bahamas to Florida. Now, at age 61, she'll soon attempt a 103-mile-long swim from Cuba to Key West. NPR's Greg Allen reports.
We're out on the Voyager, a 32-foot power catamaran. Diana Nyad is preparing for a short training swim, just 3 hours. Since deciding 2 years ago to tackle one more big endurance swim, Nyad has been training relentlessly with 9-hour, 15-hour, even a 24-hour swim. She and her team of trainers, boat pilots, meteorologists, and shark divers are ready. Now, they're just waiting for the weather.
But at least for 4 or 5 days, it's going to be more rough, bumpy.
Yeah, there's no big hole behind it.
All right.
We're wishing.
Nyad says she needs the water in the Florida Straits as warm as possible, hopefully in the high 80s. Once she takes off from Cuba, she'll swim for at least 2.5 days straight, an estimated 60 hours, without a wetsuit. Hypothermia is a worry, and a few tenths of a degree can make a big difference. She also wants calm seas. Today, there's some wind, and to a swimmer, even small waves are a problem.
You know, it isn't even to white caps, which means, what would you just call this, a 1 to 2 foot sea? Was that listed? But, you know, you're entirely on the surface, like you have a dead flat calm, which is what we're looking for, that magic they call the doldrums. Then you glide across the surface. Your legs aren't working to get up to get a breath. Your arms aren't slapping and boxing the surface. You're just above it.
We're going to be leaving here. And we're going to be heading towards there, Fort Jefferson, trying to hit somewhere here.
David Marchant, Nyad's navigator, is holding a map that displays the spider web of ocean currents she'll have to negotiate between Key West and Cuba. Nyad actually tried this swim once before, in 1978, when she was in her late 20s. She was in the water for more than 40 hours before she was forced to quit. Strong currents and high winds in the Florida Straits pushed her off course, making a landing in Florida impossible. Nyad says that experience taught her that it's crucial to have someone aboard who understands the currents.
Because you can take any boat across. Can you take a swimmer across? Can you navigate that Gulf Stream and the eddies off Cuba and the tides off Florida? And every time I stop in the Gulf Stream to take my nutrition, I'm being dragged to the east. So it's a tricky navigational proposition.
Nyad will also bring along a team of kayakers and divers with a singular mission: to keep sharks away. The kayaks will have electronic shark repelling devices. The divers are there as a backup to drive off any sharks that become too inquisitive, especially oceanic white tips, an aggressive species common in the Caribbean. Since Nyad first tried it, one other person, Australian Susie Maroney, successfully completed the Cuba to Key West swim. But that was in a shark cage, a massive enclosure that circles and protects the swimmer. Nyad plans to do this trip without the cage.
I have nothing against that. You know, I understand it. Those are dangerous white tips out there. It's no joke. But I don't want an asterisk next to my name. So you can do it, but it says, make sure you know this was with a shark cage. I just want to swim in the clear open ocean with all the elements. What do you want?
Nothing. Go ahead. But you're going to get in the water in about a minute and a half. So.
NIAID's trainer and best friend, Bonnie Stoll, gets her ready to swim. With goggles and swim cap in place, NIAID's in the water. NIAID quickly finds her rhythm. Strong, steady strokes. In her younger days, she powered 32 miles across Lake Ontario and 50 miles along Australia's Great Barrier Reef. Those achievements and many others landed her long ago in the International Marathon Swimming Hall of Fame.
I'm going to call her in with the whistle.
After an hour and a half, it's time for NIAID's first break to take water and food. She comes up alongside the boat with a question.
Driving me crazy. So help me remember the words. On the second day of the desert sun, my skin began to wet.
America.
Now what?
After three days.
What?
After three days in the desert sun.
But what's that next line? The third.
My skin. Oh, sorry.
After my skin began to turn red on the third day, what happened? That's the line I'm missing.
Pretty soon, everyone on the boat is singing. Eventually, we come up with the missing lyrics. Her goggles are back on, and she completes her swim. Afterwards, back on the boat, NIAID recalls a 15-hour swim she did last year off the coast of Mexico. When she came up at the end, a friend had a question.
So she said, Diana, what do you think about out there? Are you thinking about the mystery of the ocean and, you know, how the tides affected by the moon and whatnot? I said, sometimes I do go there, but to be really frank with you, right that minute, I was singing the Beverly Hillbillies theme song 2,000 times.
After retiring from distance swimming, NIAID spent the next 3 decades pursuing a career as a radio and TV journalist. During all that time, she stopped swimming. Until 2 years ago, when faced with her impending 60th birthday, she decided to begin training for one more big swim. She was ready last year, but permission from Cuban and U.S. authorities came through late in the summer, and the weather didn't cooperate. Now, within the next few weeks, she expects to complete her dream and at the same time set the record for the world's longest unassisted ocean swim. With her support team and her training, NIAID has nothing but confidence, even though she concedes she's not as fast as she used to be.
One of the reasons is I'm bigger than I used to be.
You've got more muscles now than ever, right?
I'm 15 pounds heavier than I was. I used to feel more like a thoroughbred racehorse. Now I feel more like a Clydesdale.
It takes a rare person who at age 61 is eager to spend 60 hours in the ocean, braving sharks and strong